Hello, my warriors! This is the Barefoot Warrior. I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Breakfast with Warriors. I am the Barefoot Warrior, and I now help people of the LGBTQIA+ community heal from domestic violence through my Unfuck Yourself program. If you would like to know more about that, please email me at barefootcoach@yahoo.com. So, let's get to it. One small note that this podcast, Breakfast with Warriors, talks about domestic violence and all the traumatic things around that. If you find that it is too triggering and it's too much for you, please withdraw, take a break, and breathe, nurture yourself, and look after yourself, practice your self-care, which, as always, is the cornerstone of your healing. Podcast, it's kind of like it's a side hustle, but I do it for nothing. Called Breakfast with Warriors. So the first season I talked about different things, and it's like completely not structured. It's, you know, I do it, I don't pay for anybody to edit it. It's raw as fuck, and that's how I like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this season I want to talk to survivors about how they move through it. If you don't want to talk about really dark spaces that you went through, then that's fine. If there's any part that you don't want to talk about, but, you know, I mean, I know in my own journey, there were a couple of days where I just didn't want to, I wanted to go to bed and not wake up in my healing. I dove right into the deep parts and went, fuck, you know, this pain actually isn't worth it. But, you know, that they were few and far between too. They were dark days, and I won't forget them, but...
Exactly. I'm one of these people. I'm, like, just proper upfront about things. So I'm happy to talk about any of it. So anything you want to ask me is pretty much cool. You know, there's not really anything that's off limits.
Okay. So, I mean,
Are you frozen?
Ah, I love technology, but sometimes
The joys of it, right? Oh man.
Yeah. So I suppose, you know, we could just talk about the beginning of, you know, of maybe go over what you said in your post, in as much or the least amount of detail you want to, and what made you make the decision to push through and work through on all your shit and move through. I mean, you went through, from what you said in your post, you went through, I got choked with my T-shirt, but from what you said, you got choked on a regular basis. And that's pretty severe trauma to overcome. You know, so I really wanted to sort of, if you could take a deep dive into how you move through that trauma to rise above it and now help other people.
To be honest, I did loads of therapy. That, you know, that was the actual, I mean, I did a lot of self stuff as well, but I did have to get quite a lot of therapy afterwards to work through it because it was just so intense. You know, it was, I mean, should I start at the beginning and talk about the story?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it started in this country. So it started in the UK. And I was in a really low place anyway. I'd had a lot of stuff go on in my childhood and I wasn't particularly strong at the time. I didn't have a lot of self-esteem or self-worth. And I'd only recently come out as being gay and I was desperate to be in a relationship. It was like being in a relationship almost, I could prove to myself that, you know, I'm gay and I'm showing that I'm gay, I'm out there. And I met this woman who, there were red flags from the start, but I ignored them. And the abuse started in the UK. So she would drink heavily. The verbal abuse was just absolutely a lot of degrading, you know, really putting me down all of the time. Subtle at first, but then extremely unsubtle. And was already trying to start separating me from my friends. And I couldn't see it. I couldn't really see what was going on. All I could see was her telling me she was this broken person who needed help. And me being me, I was like, oh, okay, you know, I'll step in there and I'll help you. So she said to me, yeah, okay, I need to get away. I need some space. Can we make this happen? Can we go traveling for a year? So I gave up my job for a year. I sold my house. I bought a motorhome with some of the money and then had a little bit of money left over to basically, you know, fund the trip to a degree. But the idea was we'd go out there and we'd work together. Not work together, actually. So we just work, both get jobs out there to help fund it. And then when we got out there, it all got so much worse. It was horrendous. She basically became more controlling. I wasn't allowed to get a job unless she was there with me. I wasn't actually allowed to do very much at all unless she was there. She would constantly criticize me then for not having enough money to buy all the things she wanted and buy the alcohol she wanted. And she smokes, but she didn't want to smoke. She wanted to smoke cigarettes and I couldn't afford that and that wasn't enough, and then she wanted her kids flown out and I couldn't afford that, so I was the biggest asshole in the world. So anyway, this kind of went on. The physical stuff in some ways was easier to cope with than the mental stuff looking back, because I used to, I guess I learned to almost switch off when it was happening to a degree. It was like the choking was the worst thing. The trying to strangle me was the worst thing. It was just, it was terrifying. But I think, you know, like I mentioned, it was almost at times like, just do it, because then all this shit is going to end. You know, I don't have to go through it anymore. Just whatever. And And it was weird because being in a same-sex relationship, people would say to me, well, why didn't you fight back? You know, it's not like she was physically low, stronger than you. And what they didn't understand is that it wasn't about the physical strength. It's about the fact that she had this power over me. And it was that that did it. It wasn't that I was scared to hit back. I'm not that sort of person anyway. But it was that I just didn't feel I could. You know, I was scared of her because of the power thing. And
I think that the term they use these days is coercive control.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And people that have never been through it don't understand that psychological chokehold that they have over the survivor or the victim. They just don't, they got no idea. Like one of the questions I got asked numerous times was, why didn't you leave? You know, why did you get in with someone like that? And I thought, it's not quite as simple as that, because they put on this mask to lure you in, and once they've got you in their control, you know, and there's a whole gamut of things there that people that have never been in it just, they don't get. And, no. You know.
And the thing is as well within that is you've got the two dynamics. So she was the one being the abuser, but she was also the rescuer. So bearing in mind, I was in a country just with her. I didn't know anybody else. I didn't have any connections to, well, I had like phone contact, obviously, but my family, my friends, no one was really around. And so as much as she would hurt me, she would then come in and be the one, oh, but I love you, and show the kindness and the warmth that I was desperate for because I was so low. And it would be that cycle. It would be that kind of pulling me back, and then the abuse would start again. And that was particularly hard, actually, because that is just, it's just a head fuck. You just don't know what to do with it. And you're just kind of like, you know, what is this person, where's this person really at? Do they love me? Is this just their issues making them do this? Or and it's all that. And I think one of the worst things for me is I started to blame myself. So I started to believe all of the things that she was saying to me. Yeah. I started to go, okay, I'm a shit person because I'm not providing this. I should be better. I've done this. You know, whatever it was that she was saying, it would sink in so deep that I started to believe it. And that, again, you think, okay, well, if I change, it'll stop.
Yeah.
But, of course, it had nothing to do with me.
No, it didn't, no.
You know, and then I realised that now. But at the time, I wasn't in that headspace. I wasn't in a strong place. So I couldn't recognise that, you know. And she knew that. And that's the thing. I was almost an easy target.
Yeah.
Because I was already vulnerable. I was already feeling lost. I was already confused about some stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I suppose with the physical side as well, it was, there was some sexual stuff as well. So when she was being nice to me and I was thinking, okay, you know, I'll be close to her because maybe that'll change. Maybe that'll get things better. You know, we'll be intimate. But then she'd become quite unpleasant within that as well. And in her mind, if I didn't like that, there was something wrong with me. Yeah, it was like, well, this is normal. Everyone does this. And if you don't like it, you know, quite aggressive and that kind of thing. And that, again, just made me feel so small and sort of inferior in a way. And, of course, I was just getting to know myself in terms of being sexual with a female. And I was thinking, oh, my God, is this what it's like, you know, in the lesbian world? And if I'm not like that, is there something wrong with me?
Yeah.
So that was really hard as well. Really, really hard. And she would do things like she would destroy my personal belongings, you know, that my family had given me to take. So anything that was really kind of heartfelt to me, she would destroy them. She would literally just throw, we'd be driving somewhere she wanted to go and she'd be throwing them out the van. And I was just like, you know, what the hell is going on here? And, oh, one of the things I just remembered that I forget, but one of the things that really stands out, I remember sitting with her, we'd had this argument, and she turned around and she said, oh, by the way, I've got HIV. Right? So I'm freaking out now. I'm like, oh my God, I've been sexually active with this person for X number of months, whatever it was, years. And I'm like, whoa, what the hell? And then she turned around about, I don't know, a day later, and she was like, oh, I was just joking around. And I'm like, it was that kind of thing. It was that kind of just manipulation and just vile, you know, and just making me go more into panic mode, because I guess she enjoyed it in some way.
Well, it's a way of controlling you. And yeah. I learned that after doing, like you said, I had three therapists at one point, and I realized that it was all to keep me off emotional kilter. So yes. I couldn't actually find any balance. And if I was off balance, then I'd never leave. That's the way I looked at it.
Yeah.
And then when you do leave, you're like a shell of your former self. Like you weren't right when you went in.
Yeah.
And you felt like nothing when you came out. And I was numb for I don't know how many months after I left.
I was really unwell. So basically what happened is when we were traveling, we found this place called Las Negras. And for whatever reason, I felt this kind of soul connection to it. It was a really peaceful place. It was just, it's just beautiful. And I found like an inner safety while I was there and managed to spend more time away from her. Didn't feel like I needed to be around her so much. Saying that, there were also days where I was there where I was literally sat on the edge of the cliff and like, I'm just going to jump. I'm just going to do this because I can't take this. But it was that balance. There were some times where I could find some inner peace. And that was the place that I realized I've got to stop this. You know, this isn't going to stop. I can't change her. You know, I can't heal her, whatever that was that, you know, she was looking for, because obviously she's damaged in some way. But I knew I couldn't do it anymore. I knew I would either end up like her killing me or me killing myself, or I had to get out. That was kind of the point it came to. And I guess having that headspace in this place, you know, gave me the chance to think about that. But oh my God, when I got home, I was really unwell, like really unwell. I had to move back into my parents for a bit because, and that's at the age of like 30 odd, you know? And it was because I didn't know who I was anymore. No, I literally had no idea. I didn't trust anybody at all. Even with my friends, I felt it was really hard to be close to my friends because I just had this absolute lack of trust in people. And I wanted to like put this wall around myself to protect myself. You know, and I think actually the biggest part of my therapy was probably breaking down that wall so that actually I could start to have meaningful friendships, relationships, you know, and all of that stuff. Because I didn't have that faith that someone wasn't going to come in and hurt me again.
And that's myself. It's a valid fear though, isn't it?
You know, when you've been through that, it's like
when you've been through that kind of physical violence and even mental abuse, I think it's underrated. I like a lot of people that I invite into the group, I haven't been through physical, do I still meet the requirements? I said emotional and mental abuse cut a lot deeper than you think. I discovered that, like, I was married for 21 years to a man and had four children before I came out. So by the time I moved in with my parents at 50, I think I was 4 weeks off 50 when I moved back in with my mum and dad. But, you know, like my first girlfriend, I noticed there was some real nasty traits. And I thought, but why? Why have you got to be so cutting and nasty? And I noticed that was a real thing in, maybe it's a lesbian thing in that, because we get so attracted to, when we're attracted to someone, it goes deep very quickly. And then it can go toxic real quick too. And I just don't, I've never understood the nasty under vibe of that. I'm engaged and we'll get married next year, and both Julie and I are very deliberate with how we speak to each other. We are going to talk through all of the things that come up, and I'm not going to say issues, because I think by the time you get to you know, we had both been through the ringer enough to know what we wanted.
Yeah.
And we were deliberate with our communication and how we treated each other and what we expected from a relationship. And, you know, it was just, and we are we just hit our 2-year anniversary on the weekend, and it's still as beautiful, if not more beautiful now than what it was 2 years ago. Yeah. It took me a lot, both of us, to go through a lot to actually find each other though.
I think for me, it's like I had to find myself to be able to put that into a relationship.
That's right.
You know, and to be able to set those boundaries, I guess, you know, about actually this is what we both want from this. And this is how we're going to be together as a couple.
Yeah.
Because before I found myself, I didn't even believe I deserved that.
And I think it's like I can't remember whether you said it in your post or I've heard it somewhere else, but how they spoke to me was, I realised that that's how I thought about myself, and I thought, I remember thinking exactly the same thing in my therapy. I went, oh, my God, everything that they said to me was exactly what I thought about myself.
Exactly. And that's why we believe it. And that's why it's so, has the power it has, because it's like they're tapping into something that's already there.
That's right.
They're not having to create this stuff. It's already in us from whenever. Yeah. And so, it's easy in that sense.
And that's why I sort of thought, well, I haven't got the mental energy to go and do a social working degree or a psychology degree. I just thought, I'm too tired. And I thought, I'll go and become a life coach. And after I did my course, I've written a program, because I discovered three things that I didn't think I was worthy enough.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I was enough, or I was too much.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I was lovable as I was, just as I am. Yeah. I'm enough just as I am. And I had to really work very hard at changing those belief systems around those three issues.
Absolutely.
I completely neglected my needs as a person and what I needed in a relationship. I never acknowledged my emotions, and what I discovered, those five things actually create boundaries. And so that's what I'm doing with my course, because I just think that, you know, I think as the LGBTQI plus community has been so, I'm not saying victimized, but, you know, there's a lot of hate crime around, and especially trans women, they suffer so much when it comes, they come out and their partner more often than not will beat the crap out of them because, you know, she's come out of the closet and they liked the life that they had.
Yeah.
You know, a dear friend of mine, that happened to her, and it was just, you know, her ex was just a nasty piece of work, you know, and she's now, you know, with her husband now, which, and they're both trans, and it was just, it's just lovely to see her so settled and happy.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I wonder if we've got to be determined to have and know what a healthy relationship is. And like you said, it's got to start with us.
Exactly. It
has to start with you. Exactly. You have to, I know Louise Hay was a huge inspiration to me. Like, listening to, I'd buy an audio book and I'd listen to it over and over. Her voice was soothing. And I go, okay, if Louise can do it, so can I.
Yes, 100%. And, I think that's, the thing. And that's why I started doing what I do with the self-sabotage mentoring, because actually I was self-sabotaging myself by being in that relationship. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't recognize it as that. But like you were saying with that, I'm not enough, you know, I haven't got that self-love and all of those things. That's at the core of all self-sabotage behavior, you know? And so for me, I've got like a real deep connection to this work, because because I've been there and lived it, and not just with this situation, you know, I've had other things happen to me and had trouble with drugs and alcohol and all sorts of stuff across the years. And just kind of, it gives you that real passion, because it's like, I've been there and I know it. And yes, your story is going to be different to mine, but we're going to be able to connect. We're going to be able to relate. And I don't want to see other people going through this for years and years. You know, I went through it, unfortunately, for a long time, not that relationship in particular, but prior to that, you know, the stuff that was going on. And so I had years where I was just self-sabotaging the shit out of my life. And I couldn't see, I just couldn't see. And then it was like, when I got support to recognize what was going on and work on my core beliefs, my inner stuff, I was like, right, this is what I need to be doing. This is what I need to be doing with other people. You know, that inner work that changes stuff.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Mm. Yeah. And that's why I have my Facebook group. It's now, look, I don't care how you identify. If you've been through it, just come on in. Yeah. You know, and there's a certain sense of grief that comes with moving on in any aspect. So I was talking to someone today. She'd moved states in America and had, I think her father and her mother had both passed away in months of each other. And then she broke up a very toxic relationship. And she went, oh, do I qualify for the group? And I said, come in, because loss is part of that grieving. A grief is part of all of it too.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm doing a self-care workshop. It's free. It's online. You know, come on in. You know, I just think that the more of us that stick together and support each other,
totally,
the more we can thrive and be the people that we were meant to be.
Totally. You know? And I've got a lot of respect for what you're doing, because I just don't think it is spoken enough about within, you know.
No, it's not at all. It's not at all.
You know,
because of I find the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard case, which was just, you know, a circus. Someone said to me, oh, what do you think? And I said, look, I've stepped away from it. I said, the thing that everybody doesn't realize is that there is a percentage of men that it does happen to. And this whole thing has opened up a space for men to go, hey, that was me. I said, I don't think anybody will really know what the truth is except those two people in the relationship.
Absolutely.
It's just televised, and it shouldn't be televised. But then you got the DV sector on LinkedIn going, this is what abusers do. They use the court system to lure their victim back into that cycle of violence. Which does happen. I was talking to a CEO of a foundation the other day, and she was saying that she left when her twins were 2, and they're now coming on 10, and she said, I've been in court for 7 years. That's what they do. They haul them back into the court system just to play. It's like a cat playing with a mouse. And you know, and I said, well, you know, what do you think needs to happen? And she said, you know, the laws need to change. Over here, we're just starting to bring in coercive control as it's an offence. But you got to prove it too.
It's really hard.
A lot of victims are so traumatized that, you're actually re-traumatizing them, taking them into the court system. You know. And when there's children involved, it gets even more complicated.
It's incredibly difficult.
So, you know, I leave that particular side of it to the experts, but I want to move. Like all the courses that I've looked at, none of them empower and give people the tools to move forward and go, you know what, I am deserving of this. I do deserve to love myself. You know, we've grown up, you know, especially being 50, in a, you know, I remember my mum saying, you know, you don't matter. It's all about the children. And I took that to an extreme where I didn't know what self-care was. Let's take what mum said and just run with it and run myself into the ground. That's what I did, you know, and went by the time I came out, I was all, I had to find a career because I was a stay-at-home mum, and I was already burnt out, and I had to find a full-time job, and I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
I look back and go, fuck, I was strong.
Well, yeah, there is that, isn't there? It's like when I got back, obviously I had to get back into work. I had to sort out a place for myself, because obviously I wasn't going to stay living with my folks. So I had to, you know, get a new place and all that stuff. And looking back, I'm like, how the hell did I actually do that at the time? Mm. You know? Yeah. And it's amazing, really.
It's one small step at a time, and it's being I think you said in your video today, I was watching the video you put up today or yesterday about making that decision, and I think there has to be a real clear decision deep within you that you want to move through this, because what you've just been through will never happen again.
Yeah, exactly.
It will never happen again.
Exactly.
And even when I went back to work, there was a woman here. I work in group homes in disability, and there was a woman, and she was clearly a bully. And I just thought, I have been to hell and fucking back, sunshine, and you don't get any part of me. And there was really no love. I put a very firm boundary up between her and I, and our next shift together was silence.
Yeah. And that's fine
by me, because I don't want to listen to your bullshit, man.
exactly that. No, I think now, I am definitely more boundaried in all of my friendships, relationships, all of it. It's I've got a very clear idea in my head now about how I want to be treated by people, and anything different, I'm stepping out, you know. And it's it is quite extreme at times, but that's how I keep myself safe. That's, you know, that's how I operate now, because I just think it's like people go around and they can look at other situations and relationships and they're like, oh, but that person keeps treating me like this, this keeps happening. And it's actually when we take that personal responsibility and go, okay, yes, it's fucking hard, but you do have a choice to step away. And I understand why at times I didn't back then, because of where I was. But I just think that owning of whatever's going on is so, so empowering.
And if you want that long lasting healthy relationship, not only have you got to know what you want in a relationship, you've also got to be that person that you want to attract to.
Yes, exactly.
So I remember reading that, and I had written a list. It's something that my sister taught me when I was like 18. Mm. You know, if you want to know what you want in a relationship, write it down on a piece of paper. Mm. When I came home, I it was detailed. It was very, very detailed. Mm. And I must admit that while there's some things that I didn't get, there were other things that I got in abundance that were more important anyway.
Sure.
And I got a beautiful person that family is very important. I'm one of five kids, and her family is very important to her. Mm. And I just think we nurture and love each other and support each other, and emotionally I couldn't ask for anything more. It's just, and the life I have now, I never dreamt of 4 years ago, not in a million years. I didn't even think I'd live the year out 4 years ago. I just didn't think, I was saying, good, you know, I was writing letters to Dad saying, tell my siblings I'm sorry for everything I've ever done to them.
Yeah.
Saying, telling my kids that, you know, I love you out of nowhere, because I honestly didn't think I was going to survive the year.
Yeah.
It got bad, you know, when you get screamed at.
deep depression, you know. There's no way around it. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I was just like, I just wanted to hide. That was it. I wanted to hide. I literally wanted to put my duvet over my head and just stay there, because that felt all I could even do, you know, and it, but in the same way, it was about acknowledging that to then move past it. So I had to almost just be really own that and just be like, okay, this is where I am. So actually, what do I need to do? Baby steps. What do I need to do out of this? And I think one of the biggest learnings was to have that level of self-kindness and compassion.
Yeah. You know, and that was a deliberate decision too, isn't it?
Oh my God, yeah, 100%. Like, I used to beat myself up like crazy for the fact that I was staying. You know, I was just like, what are you doing? You know this wrong, you know, da 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 da. Wasn't being kind to myself at all. Wasn't acknowledging that actually I'm in a really, really dark place right now. And that doesn't
And help. You were also in survival mode too. You were doing what you had to do to actually keep yourself alive.
Well, exactly.
Because the first 6 to 9 months after you leave an abusive relationship are actually the most dangerous. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's where, you know, if it's a super violent situation people are in, they need to really start planning their escape. I know I was talking to a charity on Monday, and he was saying that he's actually, through COVID here in the state I live in, DV in 2020 went up by 75%.
Doesn't surprise
And
me.
he said my job at the time just stopped because I couldn't travel. And he said, and he ended up starting a charity for sending phones to shelters, free iPhones, like no strings attached. Yeah. He got a grant from the government and bought SIM cards from Aldi because they're cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
That's the supermarket over here. And he was just saying, you know, that's what he sends them off to, you know, anyone that wants them with no strings attached.
Yeah.
And he said, and even hospitals, so that if they have that woman that comes in or that person that comes in, mm-hmm. they can give them a phone, they can activate it, and Aldi SIM cards last for a year, whereas other ones only last for a month. So she can, they can activate that and have it hidden somewhere.
Yeah.
And then plan their escape.
Yeah.
And then leave, because quite often you've kind of got to be there one day and gone the next.
Yeah.
Because your life depends on it.
Well, yes, it's funny you say it. Well, not funny, obviously, but interesting you say that, because obviously I was in Spain in this camper van with her. I'd sold the house, so, and she'd been renting previously anyway before that. It was my house. And so we didn't have anything to come back to, but actually I had to drive from Spain back to the UK. Now, I told her, I made the mistake, looking back now, of telling her that it was over just before we left. So we were driving, I'm driving this massive camper van, or, you know, not massive, but yeah, but much bigger than a car, right? One side of the road and all the rest of it. I got a bit used to it, but you know, you're panicky anyway, because you've kind of been like completely squashed down for like the last 12 months. And she literally started to try and choke me from behind. So she sat behind me, choking me when I was driving.
Wow.
And I was like, I was absolutely terrified. I don't know why she stopped. Maybe she realized I'd end up killing both of us if I smashed the van, or that I wouldn't get her home. I don't know, but she did. But that was the bit, and I thought, yeah, I wonder if, and that was probably one of the most frightening time. One, because I was driving, obviously, and two, because I was just like, shit, this is because she doesn't want this to be over. And it was this, almost this thing of, I don't know, I just had this fear that she would rather, like, me not be there. Do you know what I mean? Like, me be dead and gone than leave her. And it was, yeah, it was horrible. Luckily, when we got back, because we originally came from, like, different areas, so we didn't have a combined friendship group because, well, none of the people I knew liked her anyway, which, you know, I guess looking back made sense. But we weren't together, you know, so she moved her way, I moved my way, and there was never any, she tried to reach out a lot by telephone and then I had to block her and all those things, but there wasn't any turning up. She didn't know, you know, exactly where I was. So physically I was in a really safe place, and that did help with my healing as well.
I was living on the other north of Sydney. And had I stayed there, I would have been quite unsafe. They would have stalked me without any hassle. But my parents live on the other side of Sydney.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing for me. So I really feel for people that get stalked physically.
Yes.
I think that's very, very hard.
Yeah.
You know, a member in my group said, you know, how do I get rid of my ex it's been 4 years and it's on social media and she keeps on making fake accounts and liking stuff. And it's like, man, that's just so hard. It's like they never quite get the message.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's yeah, it is really difficult. And I think there also continues to be that push pull thing, doesn't there? You know, so in the weaker moments, if they're being really nice and charming, because it's not, they're not always unpleasant, you know.
Yeah.
It, there can be that when you're feeling really weak and really alone. You know, I know a couple of times when she texts, I was just like, oh, maybe I should see her. And luckily my family was like, it ain't happening. You're not well enough to make that choice right now. They were like,
I think there's something in my genes that just go, no, once I've made that decision, I give excuse after excuse. Once I've made that decision, it's like, fuck you, might as well be dead, you know, like I'm not doing that again. It wasn't good the first time, but there was definitely the trauma bonding where I thought about them a lot and what they did, and I felt very, I had to process all of that.
Yeah,
100%. But that's like you said, you know, and at one point I was with a trauma therapist too, and that really created a safe space for me to just talk, and their experience was with children. So I knew that she had this the skills to move me through. I only went for 4 or 5 sessions, but that's all I needed because I had been doing deep work in another therapist as well. You know, I just knew that I had to do the hard work because that shit was never happening again, and I would do whatever I had to do to look after me and do what I needed to do, you know, and that's what I had to do. And it was dark for quite a good year, and I thought there has to be light at the end of the tunnel. There has to be, and then I could feel it coming. Yes. And, you know, my living in Australia, self-care, the beach was it. The waves were, there is something so magical about water.
There is
something about water that just washed away everything. And then I'd ground myself on the sand.
Yeah.
And I feel really blessed to live in a country where I can swim at the beach 9 months. Well, I can do it 12 months out of the year, but I'm not doing winter. I haven't quite worked myself up to that yet.
It's supposed to give you that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. It's totally invigorating to swim in the ocean. But I'm trying to create a veggie garden this year. So, I'm getting my beds ready for summer because that's about 6 or 7 weeks off. So I'm still getting my hands in the earth and stuff like that, and that's just as good to be honest, which is
things like that were so important. Like I really got into meditation, did a lot of kind of almost like a spiritual healing type stuff as well.
And I got into the spiritual side of things too. Definitely. I think I've always been spiritual anyway. So, and I've had so many experiences since I've been through it all anyway. So, I struggle to focus though. I really struggle to focus. I don't know whether it's what I've been through or maybe I need to actually make sure that I sit and relax and just let go.
Yeah.
You know, and do
not
those.
Not easy though, is it?
No, it's not.
I think it's one of those things I had to practice.
Exactly.
I had to practice to be able to just be and relax and just really ground myself because I hadn't I was living in fight and flight for so long. Like, you know, my brain didn't know what to do with like quiet peace. It was just like, this feels weird, you know, and it would almost be like, what, you know, what's going on here? That's the thing.
When's something going to happen?
and we forget that the familiar can feel safer to people than even if it's a really shitty situation, because it's familiar, it can actually feel safer than being in the opposite. So being in
that's the reason why we repeat the patterns though, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, because we keep
because it's what we're used to, and it's you know what we feel safe with, and you know, I did a course at a women's center, and I thought, oh, today's about children, you know, it won't be a big deal. The kids weren't involved, and then by the time that session was finished, I realized that Oh, hang on. My eldest came to me and said that their father had been physically abusive to them. And I looked back on my childhood and realised that, you know, the mental and emotional abuse that my father put on my mother, that I had actually been a child of, and all my siblings had the hallmarks of, you know, like bedwetting, we all don't believe in ourselves, like all five of us. You know, my brother-in-law said to my sister at one point, I've never met such talent as such a family of talented people who just don't believe in themselves enough to do anything about it.
And
that is a core mark of children that have grown up in domestic violence. You know, and it's like, and that was a really, really dark day for me. The pain was overwhelming and I just had to sit with it and, you know, and I remember my eldest messaged me and said, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not. I said, I'm not going to do anything, but I'm not okay, you know.
Yeah.
And I think just acknowledging that and saying, look, I'm not okay, but, you know, I just need to be on my own to just be with that.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the thing. There is a big thing about learning to sit with your emotions, isn't it? And not trying to almost fix or push them away or kind of reach out and do something to take them away, because that's what gives us our inner core strength. Well, for me, definitely, you know, just knowing that, yeah, there's going to be painful stuff, but I can sit with it. You know, I can.
And look at all the shit that I've been through. Like, man, an emotion is just that. I find that, you know, once you acknowledge it, it kind of just goes, oh, okay, see you later. Anger is a whole different ball game because it's like an umbrella for so many underlying emotions. I struggle processing that all because a lot of stuff has come up about my ex-husband, and that's my shit. That's not his shit. That's my shit.
Sure.
And I just keep on going, okay, this is how I feel about you today. And just, you know.
Yeah.
Hang on, what am I doing? Why am I doing that?
Yeah.
And then going, okay, you know, and even Julie, you'll have to say, what's going on with you? You know, she's had to say that a few times because I've gone back to default mode a few times and gone, oh, hang on, it's Julie. Yeah. You know, it's not them.
Yeah.
I had to say that to myself quite a lot. You know, her intentions here are pure. You need to, you know, and I've had to. Because of the anxiety and the build-up and all of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've both had to nurture and support each other through, you know, different forms of post-traumatic stress too. And I found that when that happens within the relationship, we've actually become closer. There's an intimacy that I have never had with another human being because of that.
Because it's very much that shared, isn't it? You're allowing yourself to be very vulnerable around it as well. They're allowing their vulnerability, and that in itself and that shared understanding of experience is huge.
Yeah, and then I remember listening to Brené Brown's, she actually called Shame in her TED Talk, and I went, I had internal homophobia there too. I was ashamed to be a lesbian. It was like, Daddy, get the Catholic week. I grew up strict Catholic. You know, here's a woman who waited until she was 50 to have a bloke and, you know, and they're really happy. I said, Dad, that's never going to happen. Yeah. I'm a lesbian. Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, he adores Julie, but, you know, there's internal homophobia going on. You feel so ashamed that you're not like the straight people, you know, because it'd be so much easier if you were. But I wouldn't want myself to be any other way that I'm, you know, I think I was the trailblazer for a few kids in the family. My eldest is transgender. I've got a couple of queer kids, you know, and I don't give a rat's ass because I love them anyway. It's are you happy? That's the main thing.
That's what it matters, isn't it?
It is, you know.
I mean, I was so lucky with that, really, because my family were just completely and utterly just like, okay, cool.
Yep.
I think they always knew, really.
I must admit, by the time I came home, my mum had advanced dementia, so she was kind of the cornerstone of that. Mm. I'm not going to tell anyone you've left your husband for a woman.
Right.
But, but nobody really cares, to be honest. Only mum did. Oh, Kylie, you've left your husband. I said, yeah, because I'm a lesbian. Oh, is that all?
That
was the reaction.
No one gives a shit most of the time.
But I had to process a bit of shame there. So sometimes, you know, I'd spent 21 years building a family with four kids, and they're great humans, and I feel privileged to be their mother.
Mm.
And then to come out at 41, there was a bit of shame around destroying something that I'd worked so fucking hard to build. Yes. And yet, you know, like I was saying to Julie the other day, but I said, you know, it's not that I destroyed it. It's just that it was time for it to morph into something different.
Exactly.
You know, I'm with who I'm meant to be with. He's with who he was meant to be with. Yep. And we're actually better humans because of it. So, yep. You know, letting go of all of that shit too. You know, some point, and that's through that approach, processing the emotions that you talk about.
Yeah, totally.
You know, they can hold us back if we don't let them go.
Yes. Well, they do. They stay literally stuck in our energy field, don't they? So, you know, they become real blocks in our life.
Yeah, like they say, the analogy of having the backpack, and when you hold on to stuff, you're putting it in your backpack, and next minute you've got this boulder in your back and you wonder why you can't move forward.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to actually let go of the backpack. And
exactly. That really takes me back to when I did my therapy with my PTSD lady. And she was like, made me draw this backpack with the stuff in.
Yeah.
But it's
true,
you know?
It is very true, yeah. Takes me back to when I started swimming, I went and got my cards read. And the medium said to me, you need to be in the water. Mm. And I went, okay. And we were coming on winter, and I had a few swims, and I had a panic attack the first time I did it. And then on the other side of winter, it was September, and I went into the water, and, you know, it was just great. But I thought, okay, I'm at the beach. It's Australia. There's plenty of shells. I'm going to pick up either a sea stone or a shell and just collect them. And every time I do it, that's a sign of my self-care on that day. And so I would often have three or four rocks in my backpack.
Yeah.
I mean, taking them home, but in the reverse, kind of doing the reverse of what you're saying. And now I've got all of these jars of sea rocks sitting there as a sign of, you know, that's self-care. That's what it means to me, you know.
Absolutely. And we've all got to find our own path and our own way, haven't we? You know, that I don't, it's like when I work with clients, there's no right or wrong way. It's going to be individual for everybody, and at a time that's right for everybody.
Yeah. It's so important for them to find their joy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you have neglected yourself, or you're a people pleaser, or, you know, like you say, self-sabotager, you don't nurture yourself because you don't think you're worthy of it. And it's the self-care is, I call it, the cornerstone of the beginning of reclaiming yourself. You have to implement it if you're very serious about turning your life around.
Totally.
You know?
And you have to trust yourself as well. That's the thing that I find. And I find with a lot of my clients, they'll say to me, I don't know how to make myself happy. So they don't trust in their own ability to do that, because other people have maybe controlled the situation and done that for them to a degree.
Yeah. And they've also been told that they're not trustworthy in some way, shape or form in the past, and that somebody else's opinion is more important than their own.
Yeah.
And I had to get rid of that record button, that critical. I ended up saying to that particular voice, sit down and shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because you don't live here anymore.
Exactly.
It's time for the worthy Kylie to step forward.
Yeah.
And it was so I found it going, what? Sit down and shut the fuck up, because you got nothing that I want to hear anymore. And I had to interrupt that pattern continuously for probably 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And then I had it under control, and then I implemented Louise Hayes, you know, having positive affirmations and her meditations in the morning and at night and essential oils. And I just did whatever I had to do to get through it, you know. And there was multi-layered things,
God, there always is, isn't there?
I don't want people to think that it's just, oh, they just went to therapy, because it's not that. We took on looking after ourselves and nurturing ourselves. You learned meditation. I'm going to the beach, which was kind of its own meditation. You know, I got to a point where I went to it's called Fair Day up here. It's an LGBT, pride thing where they've got all these stalls, and I saw an ex-girlfriend with her fiance and I wanted to throat punch her, and I went, yeah, you've got a bit more work to do.
Yeah, you're right, you know, and this is ongoing stuff. I don't believe any of us ever actually stop that journey, you know.
No, we don't.
The journey is always going to continue. That was just a particularly bad part of it that I had to overcome,
It was also an opportunity. Like I started a blog when I think I'd been home for about 10 weeks. Mm. And Rock Bottom is actually a beautiful place, because even though you're not 16 anymore, you've actually got the wisdom of experience to actually rebuild your life the way you want it to be. Like it's a blank canvas, man. Yeah.
100%. I think it is once you get to that point, it's a really exciting time.
It is, yeah. You know? And I was just determined to do whatever I had to do. So, and that's what I want to help the people in my group do too, is to, you know, I know things are bad right now, but it's really, life can be better than what you imagine in 3 years' time. Oh, yeah. I promise you. It's so much better on the other side if you do the hard work. Like, I never thought I would be as happy as I am now. I never thought that I would pay off another house, but I'm paying off a house. Mm. I've got my own veggie garden, which I just never thought that I would do ever again, you know, and here I am. So life on the other side of that hard patch is just more beautiful than they ever imagined.
Yeah.
Because they've got the confidence and the happiness and the self-belief to make things happen,
to do it,
you know. Yeah.
And also, my level of gratitude became so much greater. Like, I've always tried to have gratitude for things in life, but even now it's just like, it's almost like I just don't take anything for granted, you know. I appreciate every single thing, because I've been so low and it's been so stiff, and now it's like, I value it so deeply.
Yeah, I'm like that too these days, where I just get so full of joy of what life, even watching, you know, nature and the birds out in the, we've got a couple of big eucalyptus trees in the backyard, and just watching the birds go about their days is quite beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
Even watching a cat or your pet, you know, even that's quite fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a lake near to where I am, and it's amazing. You get all the ducks with the little ducklings, and it's just, it's that nature thing. It's that real kind of earth grounding, beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
Really powerful.
Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for chatting with us today. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. It's been great. Thank you. It's been lovely to meet with you.
So if you want me to come on, you know, on one of your lives, just give us a
message. Oh, cool. Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah, definitely.
You know, and the house cat is about to walk across. Here we go.
Brilliant. Yeah. I'm surprised my dog hasn't started barking.
I'm actually on night shift at work, so.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the house cat, so, yeah.
Aww. Oh, bless.
Yeah, he's gorgeous. Oh. Anyway, Em, thank you so much.
Yeah, no, you're very welcome.
Everything.
Enjoy.
And we'll stay in touch, hey? Yep. Excellent. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Oops, I can't find the button.